Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBW 106.5 FM, Los Angeles.
102.3 FM, Riverside.
And 105.0 AM, Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. It's Tuesday, so it is time for Mr. Michael Hawley.
That is correct. I'm the Tuesday guy. Hi, Al.
Yeah, Tuesday guy. So you've been out doing your promo for your new book,
Yes.
Jack the Stripper.
That's right. So, yeah, Jack the Ripper. And then, so it was nice being on House of Mystery last week. It was going to be tonight. And then, so I've been doing a couple other podcasts as well. So it's pretty neat.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. It's about time people found out who Jack the Ripper really was.
Yeah,
and then they can read your book, too.
That's right. There you go.
Well, today we are going to be talking to an author, first time on the show. And I see she's got a new book. It's called At the Ready, Global Security Unlimited 3. So, Sharon, Michael Love, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too.
Well, Sharon, how did you get mixed up in this awful writing world?
Well, I mean, I've been reading on my own since I was four. I started reading mysteries when I was eight. And I'm not talking Nancy Drew. I'm talking Agatha Christie. Yeah, I always wanted to be a writer. And I can't tell you the first thing I wrote because I have no idea. But in high school, I decided what I really wanted was to be a poet. So I started writing poetry and sending out poetry for publication. But I wasn't like people now who, you know, they look for little internet magazines and stuff like that. No. I sent my stuff to The New Yorker, Poetry Magazine, places like that. And I did get a couple of nice rejections. I had lots and lots and lots of rejections. And then my mom had a cousin who worked for Random House. So I sent him, I collected all my poems into a book and sent it to him and said, would you publish this? he was very tactful as he said no.
Oh, he did say no.
Well, you know, he told me that you really kind of had to be a published poet and you had to have a reputation before any publishing company was going to be willing to take a chance on a book like that. And I was 15. So then I stopped writing poetry. And I went to college and I ended up going into history. And so I was published in history for a while before I went back to trying to write a novel. But I had tried to write a novel in my 20s and in my 30s and in my 40s. And I could get about two chapters in. And then I didn't know where to go. And you would think somebody who read books all the time wouldn't have that problem. But I was trying to write mysteries and it didn't work. And my husband died in 2013. And in 2017, I moved up to Chicago from Champaign, Illinois, which is in the central part of the state. I was trying to figure out how to make this new life in this new place. I mean, my brother lives up here, but that's not quite what I was thinking. I mean, I wasn't going to make my new life around my family. I joined a group called Just Write Chicago. And so I would go and I would write with these people several times a week at coffee shops. And I realized that I needed a little help in actually structuring a novel. So I started taking classes with a group called the Guppies, which are a chapter of Sisters in Crime, and learned things about like creating scenes and all that kind of stuff. I've taken a lot of classes. And I wrote my first book. I started it in July of 2018, and I finished my first draft on New Year's Eve, 2018. And I thought that it was pretty good. 3.5 years later, I finally had a book worth publishing. So that's kind of how I got into it. And because it's romantic suspense, which means that and I broke some rules.
Right.
One of the rules I broke was that if you want to be published by a mainstream publisher and you write anything that has romance in the title, I mean, if it's that genre, even if it's romantic suspense, your characters need to be in their 20s or early 30s. They won't touch it otherwise.
Yeah, wow.
My book has characters in their 40s.
Oh.
And if you ask me why, I can't write people in my 20s. I published my first book on my birthday 2 years ago at the age of 70.
Wow.
So I kind of moved beyond that. And much as I like younger people, I think there's a callowness that you grow out of as you get older and you get more experience. And I like the depth of character that you get in older characters.
Right.
So I ended up publishing it myself after the Illinois State Library Association awarded me semifinal for it in their soon to be famous Illinois writer competition.
Oh, nice.
I decided that was enough of a kind of.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Go ahead. That I went ahead and published the book and decided to pick a cover that also was not typical for romantic suspense, even though the first thing they tell you about covers is look at the top 100 bestsellers in your genre. And I can tell you that those are mostly pictures of guys with no shirt, six packs, frequently shaved heads, beards, and tattoos.
Right. Yeah. Michael does the posing of those.
Yeah. You know, but yeah. That's where I make my side.
But anyway, I picked a cover that's got a guy who's looking down. It's called At First Sight. At a woman who's sitting on a bench looking out at a lake. And it takes place in Chicago, so you would assume that it's Lake Michigan. And he's wearing a suit. And it's because he's a 40-year-old ex-MI6 agent. He's kind of not going to look like a Navy SEAL.
Right.
So anyway, I've just kind of continued along that path. And all three of those books are indie published.
It's always an interesting history. Everyone's slightly different and, you know, much the same complications and desires, but it doesn't always, you don't get there the same way. You know, you look far younger than in your 70s. I mean, I would have thought, you know, you're
oh, thank you.
Much younger.
Last fall, I was having trouble with my radiator. I live in a 1917 building and we have radiators. And our housing association treasurer came over and he was working on it with me. And he said, he looked at me, he goes, we must be about the same age. I said, well, how old are you, Eric? He said, 55. I said, I'm 71. And he said, really? I thought you were 53.
That he was older than you. That's what he thought.
Yeah, he thought he was older than me. You know, everything's changed. I remember, you know, my grandparents being in their 40s and 50s and looking ancient to me.
Kind of like yeah. Michael now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, you and I, we're both 61. I'm 61, I'm sorry. Not 61, yeah. I feel 61 now.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's usually the oldest one in the room, so that's why.
Thank you, Sharon. You saved me.
Yeah, frequently now I'm the oldest one in the room. I do have friends that are, you know, 78, 80.
Ah, yes.
See, but you should have just said you're 51, and then we would have believed it.
We would have believed it, really. Yeah. Your photos really does show nice.
Well, on the phone, people tell me that my voice sounds very young, but I can't tell because it doesn't sound to me like it does to other people.
You know, but was there a certain thing that happened? This is always one I always like to ask, because so here you are, you've been reading and you've been writing sort of your whole life, but what was it that actually happened that made you decide, well, I'm going to actually publish this. I'm going to put this out and everybody and their dog can go out and buy it now on Amazon or whatever and read it. Like what was it that pushed you over the edge, so to speak?
So it's the feeling of being left out. I had met lots of authors and I wanted to be them. So, you know, you want to be able to say you have written, and you want to be able to show that you have written. And the only way to do that is to actually publish. So nervous as it made me, I always aimed at publishing.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, that you have a PhD, a historian, and a lot of people, you know, that's kind of what an accomplishment. And you're still striving to do this. That's really pretty impressive.
Well, it's funny because the reason I finally finished my PhD, because I wanted to do it earlier and never worked out for me, was that I lived in a place where having a PhD was the norm. In most places, it's not. But when you live in an academic community, it's the norm. And my department was faculty members, me, I was an academic professional, and the staff who were civil service. So I wanted to be like everybody else. And my husband had a doctorate. All my friends had doctors. So that's kind of what you do. So at 40, I started thinking about it again. I wanted to change jobs. I wanted to do some different things. And people kept saying to me, well, why aren't you doing it? And I said, because I'll be 50 by the time I'm done. They said, well, you'll be 50 whether you do it or not. So you might as well be 50 and have your doctorate.
That's a good point.
I finished at 45, so it wasn't quite that bad. But yeah. And then of course, everybody said, so now you're going to go out and look for a faculty position somewhere. And I said, a beginning assistant professor makes less than I do as an academic advisor. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. I think there's a reason you get a doctorate other than just, you know, other than a job necessarily in it or something like that. But that's interesting. So now why romance thrillers? Like you spend a lot of time in history and studying history and learning more nonfiction, let's say, kind of categories, but yet you're writing in kind of this romance thriller genre. So why that?
Okay, so I tried writing historical novels. I'm published as a historian, mostly articles, but published. And I didn't want to keep doing that. I retired at 55 and I wasn't going to keep doing academic stuff, really. So I tried writing historical novels. And one of the problems for me with historical novels was that the history has to be accurate. So, you know, I would have been working on something for 20 years and not getting it finished because I would be constantly looking stuff up, worrying about stuff, trying to make, you have to have some characters in your historical romance, your historical novel that are real people. You have to make sure you have them where they were supposed to be, where they were, all that kind of thing. And I just decided it was overwhelming. And I'd always wanted to write mysteries. So I thought, well, okay, so I don't really have an idea of what I want to write, but I have these two characters that I want to write about. So I decided I would try writing a mystery with these two characters. And I couldn't make it work yet again. So then I thought, well, you know, now since my husband died, I've been wanting to read something light. So I've been reading all this romantic comedy. I'll write a romantic comedy. Didn't have enough plot for me. So that didn't work. But when I put the romance with the suspense, that worked. Don't ask me why. If you read my book and you read my first draft of that book, they're like totally different stories. I had to pull out a whole subplot. Then I had to make it fit back together. Then I had to do other stuff. So it was about, and I was writing in third person, and I let it sit for quite a while because I got kind of depressed by the rejections I was getting.
Yeah.
And then in October of 2020, I couldn't figure out how to write at home because I'd always written in coffee shops since I'd gone back to writing. And in October of 2020, I thought, you know, I'm going to give it one more try and see if I can make this thing work. It's not like I don't have a draft. And I set things up to write at home because, of course, we weren't going out and writing during the height of the COVID epidemic, and I got that to work when I could keep my cats off my keyboard. Yeah. And I thought, you know, I'm going to rewrite my first scene in first person present tense and see what happens, because I didn't think I could write that way. And then I sent it to two friends of mine who had read the whole book before. And they both said, well, you know, I liked the book the way it was, but boy, this is so much better. So I rewrote the entire thing in first person present tense. And that turned out to be the best voice for me. I wouldn't have expected it because everybody tells you don't do that, especially when you're a new writer because you know, it's really hard to handle and all this kind of thing. But it helps. The dialogue is one of the strongest things I write.
Mm. Yeah. And your characters. Now, I noticed in this At the Ready book, you've got a hunky French Canadian security executive. So that's obviously you took that character from me. Where do you?
And you're French Canadian?
Well, actually, yeah. So now, where do you get your characters from? Like, what? Where do they? Are they actual people or subjects, or do you create them in your own imagination? And what kind of relationship do you end up having with these characters?
So some of both. I have to say that Cress Taylor in the first two books bears an unfortunate resemblance to me in a lot of ways. She's clumsy, so am I, things like that. Insecure, has a doctorate in history. Max, who's the hero in the first two books, the MI6 agent, I was very lonely after my husband died because I'd never lived alone in my whole life. And so I kind of created him as my book boyfriend. And so he's got all the traits that I like in a man. And I'd always been fascinated with spies even before I met my husband, who I should tell you was a composer, not a spy. And it just kind of came from there. And with JL, I just decided that I wanted something different. And I didn't know I'd be writing an entire book about him. So I made him French Canadian. And I made him be from Vancouver. And then, of course, I get early readers before the book was out saying, but he's French Canadian. Why is he from Vancouver? I said, there's French Canadians in Vancouver. And, well, you know, too typical if he came from Montreal. So they tend to be a composite of a bunch of different things. My villains are people that I probably have never met in my life. So they just kind of come out as I write. But I do get quite fond of them. In my mystery novel, Dead in the Alley, I decided that my policeman was going to be a former bike racer because I'm interested in bike racing.
Now, do you hear them, these characters? Like, how do you write the dialogue? Is it like watching a movie, or do you actually hear the characters? Do they actually kind of run with it and you watch them, or are you completely in control?
I shouldn't say I'm completely in control. I start writing the dialogue. I'm not hearing anything, but the words just seem to come, you know, seem to just flow from my fingers. And I don't know why. I have no idea why. When I first started writing the first book and I had people reading it and they're going, you know, I laughed out loud. And I'm like, but I'm not funny. My husband always told me I had no sense of humor. So, yeah, but it turns out I'm very good at writing banter, and maybe it's from watching 1930s movies all the time when I was a kid.
Oh, well, you just never know where it comes from. So when you write these stories and when you sit down to do a book, you know, there's entertainment value to it, but is there also a meaning or some sort of subtext that you have to each one of your books?
I think that a lot of it has to do with figuring out how to make relationships work. And how people negotiate that. I think that's one of the things that I'm really interested in. And I'm also interested in family dynamics. And that's kind of a weird thing because when you read my books, either the families are great or they're horrible. And my family falls in the middle. It's when I wrote the first book, Cress Taylor's family is the worst thing you can imagine. Her father's kind of blackmailing her, among other things. And I thought, God, I hope nobody thinks this is my family.
But that must be kind of hard in a sense, because when you're writing things that are personal, even if they're just feelings, or they're emotions or things you think or believe or been part of your own life or relationships, and you're putting them down on paper and putting it out for other people to read. And nowadays with social media, it's like crazy. Anybody and their dog can say something really mean or something bad about what you've written. Does that sort of make you pause when you write, or do you get concerned about that?
So far, nobody has done any personal attacks. I think maybe because I just don't have enough readers.
Well, we'll fix that. Okay.
There you
well,
go.
That's good.
Yeah.
I would appreciate that. I was very excited today because I sold one copy of each of the three books in the series, and I'm thinking, oh, somebody liked the series enough that they want the whole thing. Yay. It's funny because I'm not an overly emotional person. And one of my big problems when I first started writing was not putting enough emotion into my books and having people say it. Like in this book, there's the main villain comes by Mickey's house, her parents' house, and he throws a grenade in the window and sets the house on fire, essentially. And at the end of the scene, so I gave it to my early reader. I have a friend who's my early reader, and she writes mysteries. And she said, I had a problem with that scene. And I said, why? Did it not seem realistic? She said, well, the fact that nobody seems upset at the end of it, it wasn't very realistic. I'm like, oh, yeah, I suppose there would be tears and there would be all kinds of
things. Unless it happens every day.
Yeah, no, that's a lot. So I usually have to go back and put that kind of stuff in. So I'm really good at the dialogue. I'm really bad at the emotion. I don't really worry about that because, you know, if I was younger and people started saying mean things, I would probably get really upset. But now it's like, who is this person? They're obviously not my reader. I've had a couple of reviews that were not, you know, hugely laudatory. They still gave me 3 stars. Like, you know, okay.
So even with your antagonists, do you personally enjoy the evil part? Do you lack remorse, Sharon?
They get what's coming to them in the end, so it's not so
oh,
bad.
There you go.
yeah, but I kind of like how much can I push them? So usually in the GSU series, you know who the bad guys are. In the mystery, you don't, so you have to figure that out.
Oh.
But because you know who the bad guys are, for me, the whole thing is, so where's the person going to go with this? What are they going to do next? You know, what kind of havoc are they going to wreak at a certain point? So in the first book, the antagonist, who's somebody who's hated this, my heroine since they were 8 years old and still hates her, has been spreading disinformation about her. So she accuses her of plagiarism and all kinds of things like that because she's a very successful historical novelist. And, you know, that's not really getting her anywhere, and she needs to do something more. So she actually vandalizes her condo building.
Oh, boy.
So, I am kind of destructive. Kress, like me, collects glass, Murano glass. And I in the scene where she goes back to look at all the wreckage, I describe in detail what it looks like to see all that Murano glass in shards on the floor.
Wow.
So, yeah, I do kind of enjoy doing that, but I also enjoy terrible things happening to the villains in the end.
That's right.
And so do you think about violence on the page or how you write acts of violence at all, or does it even cross your mind, or do you hold back on it, or what's your feeling?
I don't put in a lot, but I put in some. So at the beginning of At the Crossroads, the first scene is actually, I didn't call it a prologue, but it takes place 10 years before, 10 years? Yeah. It takes place much earlier than the rest of the book. And instead of focusing on the main character, it focuses on his parents. And they're watching an explosion in Istanbul. And as the news story goes on, they realize that their son was caught up in this explosion. And I did go into quite a bit of detail of what that was like when the IED goes off. And there's kind of a rain of all these little bits of metal that are flying all over the place and all the people who get killed. And all that. But then I don't have a lot of other violence in the book, not in graphic detail, just like I don't write sex in graphic detail. So I like to leave quite a bit to the reader's imagination because I'd like to think that readers have an imagination.
You haven't had my readers. No. So what do you think each book has done for you personally?
I think the first one gave me the confidence to go on. I was very excited. I think I was lucky with the first book because I'm sure that a lot of the large number of pre-orders, because I got 74 pre-orders for that book, was because my friends were all trying to be supportive, all the people that I've known over the years. I haven't had anything like that since. But and then I did my very first book signing on the day the book came out, which was also my 70th birthday. Uh-huh. That gave me a lot of confidence, but it also showed me that I could do it. And that made a big difference. The second book was unexpected because I wanted it to be, actually the second book should have been about Mickey and JL and not about Max and Cress. But I realized that I had another whole part of their story to tell. And so I wrote that. And that, so it was surprising in that way. It was also a little bit harder to write in some ways and a little bit easier to write in other ways because I had finally learned some tricks about constructing a book. And then I wrote Dead in the Alley because, and this has never happened to me before and it doesn't seem to be happening to me since, I woke up one morning with the story there, the characters, the setting, the plot, everything. And I spent a weekend just doing nothing but, and I was in the middle of At the Crossroads, just writing everything down and creating kind of a work Bible for it so that when I went back to it, I could do it. And it came together much more easily than the others. And then I had to do At the Ready. And again, it was much more difficult.
Yeah.
Every book is more difficult than the last. And right now I'm writing a cozy mystery and it's difficult in yet another way.
Yeah.
So your friends, usually I've heard friends of authors, they can tell they're an author because they have a book in their hand and they say, oh, that's an idea. And they start writing things down even when they're eating dinner with them, wherever they're at. They're putting, they're researching, I guess. Are you one of those friends?
No, I don't write anything down while I'm having dinner with friends. I'm one of those weird people that certain things just stick. For certain kinds of trivia, I'm really, really, really good. Sometimes I think it's just the history background tends to make you remember all kinds of stupid details about stuff. And I get a lot of stuff that way. I'm not one of those people who goes and sits in coffee shops and eavesdrops on other people and writes down their conversations. I don't do that either. And I don't know why. I keep thinking that might give me some other ideas or ideas for dialogue or something like that. But somehow my writing just doesn't work out that way. Once I figure out who my characters are and what my setting is, then I start working out the plot. And I've tried different things. So with my first book, my efforts at plot were not great. I took a plotting class. I wrote down 80 scenes. I realized later that most of those 80 scenes were kind of boring. And then as I went along, I had to go, well, what could I do to make this more interesting? Now, and then I went through a period where I would create these worksheets. And now what I do is once I've got the idea for the story, I write a synopsis of about 3,000 words. And then I start writing the story. And then as I go along, I stop looking at the synopsis. And then at some point, when I start to think, oh, what am I supposed to be doing now? I go back to it and I go, oh, well, I kind of veered off here a little bit. And then I have to figure out how to go back on track. But with the book I'm writing now, I had it all worked out. I always like to know who the murderer is right up front. And I had that, and I had what I thought was a good motive and all those kinds of things. And I had good reasons for everybody else to have wanted to kill this woman. And then I realized that that was the wrong story and that it would have to be a different person and the motive would have to be different. And I hadn't actually created that person. Huh. So, and I was already, about 10 chapters into the book at that point. So I've been doing some tinkering, but I'm writing chapter 19 now. So that's not bad. And, it's kind of a fun book. When I tell people about it, they're always like, and you'll know something about the people I know when I explain. It's called Murder at the Great Jane Austen Cook-Off. Mm. And it's essentially kind of it's a modern book. It takes place now in a small Hampshire village. And it's essentially Jane Austen meets Agatha Christie. And every time I tell people about it, or the people that I know, they're like, so is it done? Can I read it now? Like, no, I'm still writing. But it is fun, and I'm both a fan of Agatha Christie and Jane Austen, so that works out pretty well.
So it's romantic suspense, but there's mystery in there, then.
No, it's a cozy mystery. It's not romantic suspense.
Okay.
Yeah, the two aren't getting together.
Gotcha.
Yeah, no. Actually, in Dead in the Alley, it kind of worked out that they did more than I expected them to, and I thought I was writing a cozy mystery for that one. And I've had people say, it's a cozy mystery. It's a traditional. It's police procedural. It's romantic suspense. I'm like, fine. I don't care. Just buy it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what you call it. Now, you must, because of your history background, I guess, now Chicago being the setting, do you write that, the location, like it's a character?
Oh, yes. Some people have told me that if they come to visit, they're planning to write down all the things I told them to see and all the restaurants I told them to eat at before they come. The GSU's headquarters are in the Rookery Building, which is a historic building built in 1889 in Chicago. And I have history of that in the books. I like to talk. I don't talk about the history of Chicago in the sense of, you know, oh, we're going to this place and Al Capone was there and stuff like that. I don't do that. My characters like to eat out, and I have lots of restaurants for them to eat in. And turns out I like to describe food. So the people who really like food porn, my books are great. People who could care less, just skip over the food. My early reader is not very interested in food. She's like, too much food again. But I had one of my readers for my first book sent me a note. She had never written a review, and I asked her to actually write what she wrote into a review. But she said, I could hardly put the book down. And then I went to bed, and I was so hungry, I got up and raided the pantry. I thought, okay, I guess I'm good at that part.
So you're making people eat.
Yeah. It's kind of sad. The beginning of the first book takes place at Everest Restaurant in Chicago, and it closed in December 2020. But the book takes place in 2014, so that's not a problem. But you can't go there anymore. They were on the 40th floor of First Financial Plaza. And they closed during the pandemic, not because of the pandemic, but because they couldn't come to an agreement for a new lease with the landlord.
Oh.
And I've never eaten there. I'm also really good at researching places I've never been, like Vancouver, like some of the restaurants I wrote about, some of the restaurants in other places, because my second book goes from Chicago to London to the Highlands of Scotland to Paris. And that caused me a big problem because it was supposed to end in Istanbul. And one thing about Istanbul is that it's got alleys, very much like Chicago alleys. Paris does not. And the guy, the terrorist who's after Max, wants to recreate the bombing, the earlier bombing, and kill him that way. And so the ending is set in that alley again. But I couldn't do that when my editor said to me, it has to end in Paris. I'm like, why? She said, first of all, your book's too long. And secondly, it just goes on and you don't need it to be in Istanbul. You just need to wind it up. So then I had to find a place that I could do it when there are no alleys in Paris. I mean, the things that are called alleys in Paris have little shops all over the place. They're not alleys. And I didn't think I could blow one of those up.
So I found
this town about 12 miles out from Paris near Charles de Gaulle Airport. And the old town, the original town, had this terrible thing happen to it in the 1960s where this plane crashed into the town. And so that part of the town is deserted, and it was supposed to be rebuilt, but it never was, and all this kind of thing. And then another town grew up around it. Now it's kind of a tourist attraction because it's on the train and there's a stop there. And so I used that. So it's not an alley, but it's really creepy.
Oh. Well, you get to fly around to all these places and do the research.
I wish.
Oh, no. Why not?
I wish. Okay, so I'm from Chicago. I've been to London many times. I've been to the Highlands of Scotland. I've been to Paris. And I did all my research on Vancouver online, although I write with a bunch of people who are from Vancouver. So I think that if I had done something that was absolutely wrong, somebody would have told me. So that was a little difficult. And then I took some advice on where to have JL's mother live, and then I didn't take that advice. I put her in Kitsilano instead because that worked better for my plot.
Well, yeah, it's a nice area. Where do you think you're going to go with all this now?
Well, I've got enough writing projects in mind, maybe to finish off. It'll take me a while. But I'm hoping I've also been doing some other publishing. So I was asked last year to write a short story for a volume called Tales from the Golden Age of Mind. And it's, all the characters have to be older. I mean, older. My characters are 70 in that one. And that came out in April. And then a friend of mine, who writes a lot of romance, just straight romance. Well, I shouldn't say straight. It's LGBTQ romance, but it's romance. And she had, signed a contract to be in an anthology, called, Austin Tea Party. And all the stories had to have Jane Austen characters in them. The Jane Austen character did not have to be the major character, but they had to at least be there. At least one of them had to be there, be mentioned. And she had signed up for that. And I said, oh, I could do that. So she gave me all the information and I went ahead and signed up. And then I said to her, well, why are you doing this? You don't know anything about the Regency. And I ended up having to read her story and do research on her story and give her suggestions on her story. And then she said, I will never write another Regency again, ever. So that came out in August. That one's called Colonel Fitzwilliam Meets His Match. The first one's called Aegean Persuasion and also has a Jane Austen theme, even though it's not a Jane Austen thing. It's kind of a modern take on persuasion. I have one coming out in November in a thing called Mistletoe and Markets. It's all about couples that meet at Christmas markets. And that's Max's older brother, who's in his 50s. And then I have one coming out in January. It's a second chance romance short story called Melting the Iceman, which is all about a retired hockey player. Who now owns a tour company that does Antarctic cruises. And I wrote that in February on my Antarctic cruise, which was fun.
Did he play for the Blackhawks?
He played for the Chicago Seabirds. Created my own. it's wise in hockey romance not to use the names of the actual teams.
They're here.
So anyway, that's, so I've done all that. I've got three more, projects for, the New Romance Cafe, which is that group. I'm hoping to get, the first draft of the Jane Austen, cook-off done, by the end of October so that I can start a 2-month project to write the second book in the Murder in the North Country series, which would be called Murder in the Studio. And I have that one planned out. That'll have continuing characters. So it's going to be, so the characters in the first novel are Bay and Greg, and they're going to continue to be the characters. I also have a short story coming out called Leaving Cleveland, which is kind of a prequel to Dead in the Alley, but it focuses on the other policeman that was in the book. And I have one that I'm just revising now for another anthology. I belong to the Blackbird Writers Group and they've had a couple of people who've left and they have an anthology out and they want to republish the anthology since it's an ebook, with stories from those of us who are newer. And I'm revising a story right now called Chasing Donatello, which takes place in Florence and has people trying to find, what they think is a cache of papers that Donatello would have produced, drawings and contracts and letters and things like that. There's no evidence that there's any material that nobody's ever found anything like that. So I thought that made kind of a good plot to work on. So I've got lots of stuff, but if I do all the stuff I want to do, I'm going to end up with 4 series at least. So yeah, I've got a very, very ambitious schedule, and that's why I said I could be going into 2039 by the time I get everything written.
Well, you go, you get that done. So now listen, are you set up with a website? Do you have social media? How do you like readers to connect with you, or where do they find you?
Okay, so I have a website. It's coffeeandeclairs.com, and I created my own unofficial publishing company to publish my books called Coffee and Eclairs Books. But coffeeandeclairs.com is good. I'm on Facebook as Sharon Michalov, and I have a chat group in there which nobody chats in called Coffee and Eclairs. Coffee and Eclairs and Conversation. I'm on Instagram. I'm still on X, formerly Twitter. And I'm on Threads, but I don't use that very often. I can also be found on BookBub and that kind of exciting stuff.
Great.
And for people who are looking for the paperbacks that don't want to buy them from Amazon, bookshop.org has them. Or you can go to your local bookstore and order them, because I did put them out through Ingram Spark.
Wow. There you have it. Now we're going to have all that good stuff up so people can find you easily, you know?
Okay.
It's all set. Now, now we appreciate you being here. Great conversation. Nice to talk to writers. Your newest book, At the Ready, Global Security Unlimited 3, Ms. Sharon Michalov. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
So did I. It was great.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.